Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Hayemi Meseches Chulin Daf Tzadivav. You know, perhaps due to their shortness, the next two Daf, and perhaps we'll just combine them together. We'll join together this and the next Daf into one session. So let's start with the Mishnah Tzadikvav Amar Aleph. Around halfway down. So, how deep reaching is the Gid HaNasha? How much do you need to remove when cleansing the thigh, the animal, of its Gid HaNasha? Bir Machlekes, which we already referenced several times in this perek, says the Mishnah HaNoitel Gid HaNasha. One who is involved in the effort of removing Gid HaNasha, he needs to know how deep to go. Tzorach Shidol Es Kulay. You have to make sure you extract the entire Gid HaNasha with all its tributaries, with all its fibers, from deep inside the thigh. And Rashi says, this is the Stam Mishnah, the anonymous, unnamed opinion in the Mishnah, which is in line with Rav Meir, who taught us a couple of days ago, Tzorech Lechateit, you have to dig deep, extract all the way deep inside, Tzorech Lechateit Achra. He holds that the forbidden Gid HaNasha extends deep into inside, deep into the flesh of the thigh. However, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says all you need to do is remove the protruding section, all the way on top. That's all. The rest is okay. Rabbi the Omer, k'dei l'kayim boi mitzvah snetila, as long as he fulfills the mitzvah of removal, meaning just shave off the top, whatever's sticking out, and the rest is okay. So that's the first machlekes. Here comes a second topic in the Mishnah. Ha'ichel megid hanosha. Kazayis. If one consumes gid hanosha material, the amount of a kazayis, which is the typical, you know, minimal volume to be considered forbidden consumption. Soifeg arboim. So he gets, the 40 malkas for transgressing. Now, let's say achloi ve'imba kazayis. He ate a full sciatic nerve, which was happened to be small in size. It did not fill a kazayis. He's still chayav, because according to the shita here of the Tanakama, which will be disputed later in the Gemara by Rabbi Yehuda again, this opinion holds that a Gid HaNasha is a full entity on its own. So its prominence, its chashivus, compensates for its deficiency in quantity, for its lack of shiur. It's a bria, it's like a creature. It's a full packet, a full entity. And therefore, he's chayiv malchus, even for eating less than a kazayis, provided it's a full gid hanasha. Okay, that's the second point. And for the third and final point in the Mishnah, we have ochel mezeh kazayis and mezeh kazayis. Sefik shmoinim. So you had a kazayis worth of gid hanasha from the right thigh, Umizek Zayis from the left thigh as well. So Big Shemoyim, we committed two violations, because according to Tanakama, both nerves, both Gid HaNashas, to the right and to the left of the animal, are Asur. So Big Shemoyim, so he gets a double portion of Malkus. We don't even know. Only the Gid HaNasha on the right thigh is Asur. And therefore, in this case, when he ate right and left, Eino Yisoyfik El Arboim, only gets 40 Malkus on account of that one prohibited Gid HaNasha. Here comes a story about Piyuli. So this fellow was preparing some, meat. He was doing nikor, extracting the Gid HaNasha for Shmuel. Bar Piyuli Abakoy, he was standing coming to Shmuel in front of Shmuel, Kamanakir Atma, he was doing nikor. He was cleansing the thigh of its Gid HaNasha. Habakoy Goyimble. And all he was doing was shaving off the top, instead of extracting what's inside. Amar Leis Shmuel says, dig deeper, chois, lower, go deeper, go down, chois beit fei, go further in, hashta, look, had I not witnessed this, you would have fed me something which is forbidden. Hashta, if now lechazisicha, hadn't I observed you, safisal, you would have served me, safisal yisura, something forbidden. Irsa soar, bar piyuli, got frightened, nafas sekinim yad, and he dropped his knife, thinking that Shmuel, suspecting him of wrongdoing, of being some, dishonest. person. Amar Lacy says, no, Loy Tirsus. Don't worry, don't be scared. I wasn't trying to accuse you of anything. I understand where you're coming from. There is a difference of opinions, and you were taught the other Shita, the Eirlach, the one who taught you the Gid system. Rabbi Yehuda, he taught you like Rabbi Yehuda, in line with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that only the upper part is a problem, and that's what you were working with. But my opinion is like the Tanakama, that the entire Gid Anasha is Aser, and therefore I'm insisting that you clean out the entire thing. Amar Rav Sheshes, comes Rav Sheshes and explains, my the shakl bar piyuli, you know, the section of bar piyuli had shaved off the rice. Rabbi Yehuda. That's the part which is only also min haTorah according to Rabbi Yehuda. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, that was forbidden min haTorah, and that's what he attempted to remove. Ask the Gemara, what do you mean to say, Mechalal? Do you mean to say this year that the part that he left inside the Rabbanan, the Rabbi Yehuda, would be forbidden, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, would be forbidden mid Rabbanan? Which means to say that, you know, this whole discussion in the Mishnah is just the top section, even the parts that's embedded. Rav Meir says the entire thing, Rav Yehuda says only the top. That's only min haTorah, but even Rav Yehuda agrees that mid Rabbanan, we don't suffice with that, we have to remove the entire thing. Is that so? So then, Bar Piyuli was only taking the top section. And apparently that's how he was taught by his teacher. Ela da'irile, so whoever taught him to just suffice with shaving off the top, k'man irile. Who was it going like? Was Shita? Which opinion was that in line with? Because you're telling me, at the end of the day, you have to remove the entire thing. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's also mid Rabbanan. Ela Rav Sheshes, the Gemara switches it. Says Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes learned like this. Man de shakal bar piyule dairais. Umay de shai de rabban, de rameyer. The section that Rabbi Yehuda took, that's what's forbidden min haTorah, according to Rabbi Meir and according to Rabbi Yehuda. Umay de shayer. The thickness, the part that he left inside, the rabban, de rameyer, was forbidden according to Rabbi Meir, but only the rabbanan. Which implies that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not even asur mid rabbanan, it's fully permissible. Di Rabbi Yehuda, afilu mid rabbanan shari. Right? So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even the rabbanan, that's allowed. That explains why he sufficed with just the upper part. He was taught in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, who says the part that's in the flesh is mutter even the rabbanan. Ha'ichal megidah nashe b'chul, amar shmur, lo yosur teira, Elish ala kaf bilvad. So until now we discussed, is it just the protruding part, even the part that's embedded in the skin, the flesh? But here comes Shmuel, he says, another factor. There's another factor at play. Only, you know, the Gid Anasha travels, right? It starts at the spinal cord, right? Branches off through the thigh bone, down the leg, right? So which part of that route, which part of that trip, which section is Asra? Only the part that's sitting over the calf, that circular section of meat over the thigh bone. Shenemar, as a pasuk says, Al kaf hayorech. We don't eat. To get an asher al kaf hayorech. Which tells you only that section is asur. I'm not public tanoi. Actually, it's a machlekes tanoi. It's only the rabbanan who limited the kaf hayorech section, whereas Rabbi Yehuda actually says it's not limited to the kaf hayorech. Ketanoi ochle v'mekazai. It's chayiv. So now, before we elaborate on this point, we'll circle back to the middle halacha in the Mishnah, the question of volume. Does it need to be a kazayas, or even just less than that if it's a full, Gid Anasha, Bria, right? We discussed that in the Mishnah. So this Brisa begins, opens with that halacha. Ach levei kazayas. He ate the full Gid Anasha, but it was a mini Gid Anasha. It had no kazayas worth of material. He's still chayav because of its chashivas, its prominence, which makes up for its loss of value. Rabbi Omer, no, acheba kazayis. It's just like any other piece of flesh, has no prominence, it's not considered like a bria, like a creature, like its own entity, and you need to have a kazayis of material to be chayav. Oh, my time with the Rabbanon. Why do Rabbanon obligate him? Hold him accountable for less than a kazayis. Briyahi. Briya b'fnei atzmahi. It's its own entity. It's like a creature. It's like a lizard. On which there's liability, even if it's less than a kazayis. We turn the page. Rabbi Yehuda achila ksivavei. No, Rabbi Yehuda says, look at the pasuk. It says, al ken lo yoyichlu b'nei Yisrael. The term achila is related to Gedan Hashem. We know, halachically speaking, whenever we relate to the experience of achila in the Torah, whether in a positive sense, eating, you know, a matzah, it has to be a kazayis. In a negative sense, eating forbidden food, it has to be a kazayis for it to be liable. Achila ksivavei. It's no different. Unless it's a kazayis, it's not liable. Rabbanon respond. What do they do with the lashon achila? No, it's not coming to limit it to a kazayis. Rather, the pasuk is teaching us a different point. It's the opposite. Rabbanon, hahi achila. The point of achila is to say dechi yisbe arba v'chamisha zeis. Suppose the giranasha is a jumbo-sized giranasha. It has four or five olive worths of volume within it. Does he have to eat the entire thing? No. And you only ate one section, which is just a kazayis worth of that huge giranasha. He's still mechayiv, he's chayiv. So it works both ways. Either or. Either he had an achilo experience, which is typically a kazayis, or he had a whole giranasha. He's chayiv even with less than a kazayis. Rabbi Yehuda. No, Rabbi Yehuda already used the word achila to indicate that it has to be a kazayis under all circumstances. So how does he know this new point? That by eating even a portion of a giranasha is chayv, ma'asher al kaf hayorech nafko. The pasuk speaks about the giranasha sitting on the kaf hayorech to tell you, you don't need to eat the entire length of a giranasha, even just a small section is chayv, oh, but provided there's a kazayis. V'rabbanon. What do Rabbanon use this term for, the Lashon al kaf hayarech? Hahu! That phrase in the pasuk, Homi boyle, look at this Shmuel. Oh, that's coming to teach us Shmuel's halacha. Stated a minute ago. The Amar Shmuel teaches us, Le osra teira, elo shal kaf hayarech. Only the section of the nerve which is situated on the yarech, that's forbidden. Here we go. So that's the source for Shmuel's halach. Asher al-kaf ha-yarech. V'Rab Yehuda, he disagrees. He says, no. Ha-yarech siv. Ha-yarech says, the entire thing, the entire length. The kula yarech. Not just this little section is us. Entire length is us. Provided that it's close to the surface as opposed to embedded in the flesh as we had in the Mishnah. But in terms of the length, the whole root, the whole thing is us, v'rabbanon. Now Rabbanon who disagree, they limit the Isser only to the section on the Yorech. What do they apply the term Hayorech for? V'rabbanon ahu, the Pasha, the Isuri Bekula Yorech. To help you identify which one of the two nerves, the two sciatic nerves sort of side by side, the internal one which runs along the bone, a longer one. You have the external one which is close to the surface, which is shorter, takes a shorter route. So which one of the two is Asher Minat Torah? The inner one. Hahu Depashit Isuri B'Kul Yarech. To tell you that's the inner one which has forbidden matter and extends throughout the entire Yarech. Depashit Isuri B'Kul Yarech. Rabbeinu Gershom actually takes out the word Yisura because according to them actually the Yisura is only on the Yarech. But the point is to identify the long one as opposed to the short one. Lapukei as opposed to Chitz and the external one which doesn't take that long route, the Loi, which is not covered by the Yisura. But of course, in terms of once you identify which one, it's a long internal one, but which one, which section, which area in that is Asur, the one that's Al HaKaf, only on the Kaf and not beside it. Says the Gemara. Now, we're dwelling on the word kaf, but the term kaf has already been used for something else. V'haykaf meboyle, it's needed lamute oif to exclude a bird from the Isra of Gira Nashad, less like kaf, it doesn't have this roundish, you know, section there. So it's needed for that, right? Kaf ksivi. In the pasuk we have the term kaf mentioned twice, enough to go around, teach us both halachas. Okay, so bottom line is, we have three discussions in our Mishnah and our Gemara, discussing the extent of the Isra Gira Nashad. Number one, according to Rameir, even the thickness, the part that's embedded in the skin, in the flesh, will be also contributed, only the one that protrudes, only that part. In terms of the minimum amount needed for consumption, for liability, according to the Chachamim, it's either a kazayis worth or a full geranosh, even if it's smaller than a kazayis. According to Rabbi, it's always going to be a kazayis. According to Rav Meir, according to the Chachamim, it applies to the right and left thigh. Contributed only to the right side. We have another machlekes, which was triggered by Shmuel's statement, which turned out to be a machlekes tanaim. According to the Chachamim, only the part that's on the kaf ayarech is aser. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, the entire gira nasha is aser, even the part that's away from the kaf. Okay, now we proceed to the sugya of taroivas, mixtures. A mix of Isser, a heter. These are the primary topics of Yeridea, making of a rabbi. Hilchas Taroivis. Okay, here goes. Says the Mishnah. Yorech shenuzba shabo ger anasha. So you have a yorech, right? That's a thigh. Inside we have the ger anasha, which has yet to be removed. And he mistakenly cooked the whole thing as one. Put it in the pot with the ger anasha. So the ganash is forbidden material, and the yarech, the rest of the thigh, has perfectly fine flesh. So what happens now? Says the Mishnah. It's all about flavor. If there is enough iser in that mix to transmit discernible flavor within the broader mixture, then it infects it, it makes it usher, and the whole thing is usher. But if the portion of Isser is too small, too minute to influence the rest, to impart flavor, discernible flavor in the rest. And typically we apply the formula of Shishim, of 60, right? So if there are 60 portions of permissible materials versus the single portion of prohibited material, then that prohibited material becomes bottled, becomes nullified, becomes cancelled out. Nevad machmas miutoi, says the Rambam, because of its smallness, because of its insignificance, it's indiscernible. Its flavor is not discernible. It's not, you can't feel it, you can't taste it. It has no prominence, it has no value. It's not there. By the way, talking about nullifying flavors, it's not to say that the flavor is gone. I mean, it's there. In fact, there's a famous parable from Chaim Brisker, Chaim Soloveitchik, big guy, and he says like this. He says people may think that when you have, you know, bitul b'shishim, the iser disappears. He says, not so. I'll prove it to you. He says, let's say you have a mix of 61 different types of food. So in our language, let's say you walk into an ice cream store with 61 different flavors, take a bucket, take an ounce of each, chocolate, vanilla, this, that, peanut butter, right? An ounce of each, for a total of 61, you mix it all together. Now, according to the analogy that bit of a shisha means that it's totally gone, disappears. So this mix now should have no taste at all. Chocolate's gone, millet's gone. It should be tasteless. Is it so? Of course not. It's very tasty. It's a confusing mixed taste. Well, it's very tasty. Right? Says Reb Chaim, the same thing with bit of a shisha. It doesn't mean that the meat is bottle means it disappears in the milk, or vice versa. It just means to say it's not discernible. It's no longer unique. You can't identify it because of its smallness and volume. So it's there, but it doesn't have its own yichus, its own identity, its own lineage, its own independence. It becomes mixed in, nullified. and sort of secondary to the other overwhelming flavor that overwhelms it. Interesting insight and clarity on the whole topic of Bittul Barayif and Bittul B'Shishim. Actually, Bittul B'Shishim, yeah. Bittul Barayif is a different concept. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Yorech shenizbashel b'gidanash. You have the yorech, the thigh, in which the gidanash was left, and it was cooked together. And yeshba b'nais and tam, there's enough in the gid to impart flavor. It's big enough to be discernible in the mix. The whole mix is also, the whole flesh is also, because of the gidanash that infected it. Keitad mishar and oisa, how do we estimate this? Kibasar b'lefes. You see, you can't really, if you taste the yerech, you can't really taste it, because the gir and the yerech have the same flavor. They're both meat material. So the only way to really set this down is to give us a formula based on basar b'lefes. Suppose the gid would be basar, would be flesh, right, meat. And the yerech would be lefes, turnip, some sort of, you know, some sort of vegetable, right? So if this amount of basar will be discernible in this amount of lefes, corresponding to the gid with the yerech, right? If it will be discernible, then you're in trouble. And you know it's asr. But if you would have this amount of basar equal to the amount of the gid mixed into the lefes, the same quantity as the rest of the yerech, and you would not discern it, then it's nullified. And Farshim explained that this is the formula that Chachamim, Rashi explains. They received the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. It's an absolute formula given by Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Mefarshim explain, many Rishonim say, this is actually, it corresponds with the formula of 60, a bit of a shish. So if the lefes is 60 times the basar, you not discern the flavor of the basar and the lefes. Continues the Mishnah. Giranosh Hashem is bashlim hagidim. Now suppose you had a collection of nerves, of veins or whatever, and you cooked it all together in a pot. Bezman shemakira. Now, if you can pull out the gid, he could identify, sees where it is. So you get that out of the way, because if it's still around, it's not going to be a bottle, right? So you pull it out. And then you have to work with the flavor, you know, question. B'nai sentam. So you have to determine whether the gid that had been cooked together with the others had enough material in it to impart flavor on the rest of the mix, on the other gidim, on the soup, whatever it is that's there. Vim lav. Now let's say you can't pinpoint the gidanash. He doesn't know where it is. It's all mixed in. Kulan asur. He can't partake in any gid. Maybe this is the one that's asur. Okay, so he knows he has to throw out the hard materials. But varoita, in terms of the soup there, b'nei sentam. Again, that's not actual gidanash. That's just been flavored by gidanash. So if it's flavor is discernible, then it's asr. Otherwise, it's nullified. And the same applies to other mixes of isr v'heta, v'chein chaticha shal nevela, a piece of a nevela, v'chein chaticha, likewise a piece shal dog tami, on kosher fish, shenishbashlim chatichos, that will cook together with other permissible materials, mash makirim, when you can discern the actual piece that's asr, you pull that out. So that's out of the way. And the rest, you have to evaluate whether there's flavor that stayed behind. B'nai santam, v'im lav. Suppose he cannot figure out which one is the forbidden fish. He must refrain from all the fish that's there. And regarding the actual liquid, again, it depends on whether there was flavor. Omar Shmuel, Loishan, when does the Mishnah say that a gidanasha will impact the entire thigh? Elishan is bashalba. That's only when it was cooked together with the rest of the thigh and the cooking process. Mixes it up, distributes the flavors, which get transported through the entire entity. And since the gidanasha gave off enough flavor, which is discernible on the rest, it's asr. Aval nitzlaba, but suppose it wasn't really cooked. It was just roasted in the thigh. Then there is no distribution of flavor. Rashi actually says nitzmas besoicha. It actually it hardens it. It shrivels it. It doesn't It doesn't open it and distribute it to the rest. So in this case, you're safe. Aval nitzel abaf was just roasted inside the thigh. Koylef oichel, just peel off the flesh, eat it. Ad shemagel gid, until it gets to the gid, which of course is asr. And the Rishon explain, doesn't mean literally all the way to the gid, because the last layer of basr sitting on the gid, it's called kedei khalifa, khalifa peeling. So that little sort of layer, right adjacent to the gid, is also asr, because even when you roast, there's some slight transfer of flavor to the material adjacent, right next to it, touching it. So that part, of course, is off limits. The Gemara just means that you peel the rest until you reach very close to the gid, and that's asr. But the rest of the basr is unaffected, because, you know, roasting does not have that same distribution effect like cooking. So that was the Gemara. Any, is that so? That roasting isn't so, you know, problematic? But Amar Rav Huna, Rav Huna teaches us, Gedisha tole b'chalva. So you have a gdiya goat, which was roasted with its chela, which is with its forbidden fat, still inside. Asr le'echel, you can't partake from the entire thing. Even the tip of its ear. Why? Because the chela, the fat, travels around and permeates the entire animal. And here we say, the thigh roasted with the gid is safe. We turn to the next page. Says the Gemara, Shani cholav mefapeya. A gid is different than chela. Shani chelv is very different. Chelv is fat, fatty material. Makes its way around. Rashi says, "Mabat space v'hoylech, mispashel b'chol abasur, bubbles its way around the entire goat." Says the Gemara, "Uvechelv asur." Okay, so now you're telling me that chelv cooked inside permissible material permeates the entire thing and it makes it asur. V'amar Rabba, Barav Barchana. There was a story of the Hava Kamed Rabbi Yechon. There was a story that was presented to Rabbi Yechon, B'knish to the Moin. So Riechanan was there, and it was a place called Knishta de Moin, and a shul in the town of Moin. Begdisha tzolei b'chelboi, sounds familiar, a goat that was roasted with its chelev intact. V'asu v'shaylod Rabbi Yechanan, they came, they presented the question to Rabbi Yechanan, can we eat it or not? V'armar, he says, no problem. Peel away the good stuff and leave the chelev behind. V'ayim ha'koylo v'ayichal. Peel away the basar, eat it, ad shemagel ha'chelboi, until he gets to the chelev, and you know, that part you cut away. Apparently, even chelev doesn't present a problem when it's roasted. It was a poor quality, a weak, you know, goat. In which case, the chelev there didn't have high, you know, fat content, which can permeate the entire goat. So this sort of fits with the first halacha as well, the giranash, with differentiating between, you know, two types of forbidden materials, fatty materials and unfatty materials. So unfatty materials like this chelev here, which wasn't, or the giranasha, which is just a plain, you know, nerve or vein, that doesn't have an effect on the entire piece by merely through the, you know, roasting experience, as opposed to true chelev, which does. So that's one solution. Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Amar, he says, I'll tell you another, here's another explanation. Kulio Bechel Bahava, he says it was actually, the story of Rabbi Yechanan permitted the rest of the animal was speaking, where the goat was roasted with its kulia, you know, the kidney with its chelev inside. Kulio Bechel Bahava Veshari, and he allowed it. You know why? Rashi explains, because there's a membrane, unpermeable membrane, which protects. Sorry, so actually he learns that it was a kulya b'chel, it wasn't a full animal, it was actually just the kidney. Okay, so again, according to Rabbi Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, they didn't roast a full animal, it was just the kulya with its chelev. They roasted a kidney with its fat intact, and the chelev there is forbidden. He's still allowed to eat, he allowed them to eat the kulya, because there is a membrane which makes this partition between the kidney and the surrounding chelev. So the chelev didn't really penetrate into the kulya. Rabban Barav Ado Amar, he gives another solution. What happened there? Kilchas bilfas hava. It wasn't really meat at all. It was actually fish. Kilchas is some sort of unkosher variety of fish. Bilfas in a pot with meat. Okay, so cooked it together with kosher material, hava. Okay, in the question was presented to Rabbi Yochanan, what should we do with this meat? Ramalu, he didn't say outright, go eat it. He says like this, let a goy sample it. We can't sample it because it's possibly usher, but give it to a non-Jewish chef, a professional chef, who certainly has his professional interests in mind. He's not going to sully his good name, his reputation, and he'll give you an honest assessment in terms of what it tastes like. Vamar Lui tells them, Litame, let it be tasted by Kfela. Kfela is a chef, Armo, Gaisha chef. And you can rely on him. And Rashi explains, Rashi says it's Lafit Tumai. Sort of an innocent assessment. You can't tell him, look, we need this for halachic reasons, and turn it into a whole formal, testimony. You give it to him, say, listen, is it, what do you think? What do you think about this thing? Tesis says, he's not going to lie because Shalai Yafsed him Nasai. Know that not to, lose his reputation as, professional, chef, connoisseur. So this way you can rely on him. Chiddush or Rabbi Yochanan. You can feed it to the guy and have him determine whether the meat imported, flavor from the non-kosher material. And otherwise, if he says it's free of any fish flavor, then you're good. Amar Rava. More on this topic of having a guy sample it. So Rava says like this, Mereish hava kakashili. The truth is, back in the day, had a big kasha. How do you explain the Bryce? The Bryce says like this, Kedero shibisha ba basa. There's a pot which was used to cook meat. A fleshiga pot. What we call a fleshiga pot, right? It's got to stay on the meat side of the kitchen. Lo yivasha bachal. We can't use it for milk. Suppose he cooked milk in it. Be nice in time. It depends whether there is any meat flavor imparted into the milk. Okay? Likewise, truma, a pot used for cooking truma, which is only suitable for a kayin to eat. A Yisrael can't use it for chulin because he can't eat it if there is truma in there. But suppose he used the same pot for chulin, b'nais and tam. Once again, it depends on the presence of flavor. Now, how do you determine? Bishleim et truma toim l'kayin. Understand the question of the truma could be given to a kayin who can eat truma and chulin. Have him taste the chulin and see if there's any truma flavor in there. Okay, that's good. El basa b'chalav man toim. Who's going to test the basa b'chalav to see if there was any flavor transfer? You can't eat it if you're a yid. Oh, but Ashtodam Rabbi Yechon, once Rabbi Yechon teaches us, Samchinan akfil armo, you can rely on the non-Jewish chef to discern and determine flavor. Chanami, Samchin akfil armo. Likewise, in this case, we give it to the guy, and he'll determine for us if there's any meat flavor in the remaining behind. Do Amar Rava, or Amar Rava, comes a new statement. What is the rule of bittul? Amar Rabbanu Batamo. We find that sometimes the Chachamim refer to the phrase of Noisein Tam, like in our Mishnah. It's all about presence of taste. Number two, Vam Rabbanu Mekfela, at times, like in the case of Rabbi Yechon, Chachamim relate to a Kfela. Give it to the guy, to the chef to determine what's going on. We turn to Amud Beis. And furthermore, Vam Rabbanu Beshishim, at times, like in Maseches Avodah Zarah, the Gemara Paskins, that mixtures and taroivis are determined by the shishim rule, the rule of 60. Okay, so now we need to know when and where to apply each one of these three formulas. As follows, hilkach, therefore. Number one, min misheni minai. If we're speaking about a mix between two different types, two different flavors, and it's dehetera, they're both permissible, like in the case of the truma mixed with the chulin, which for a kohen are both okay, but time, have him give it a taste, and let us know what's going on. Next case, the isura. If we're speaking about a mix which generates an isra, like meat and milk, in which case a isra can't risk tasting it, bikfela, you offer it to the geisha chef to tell us what's going on. And finally, umin b'minoi. Suppose we're speaking about a mix between two of the same flavored materials. The lekula mekemat time, in which case taste flavor is not really going to be a factor. Inami, alternatively, min b'she'eni min di sura. You have two different types which are going to be asur. But there's no guy. There's no chef around. But like a kfela. So in these cases, we do apply a standard rule called bishishim. So if there are 60 portions of permissible versus the single portion of iser, then it's nullified, it's bato, and you can have it. Now, interestingly, the Rama actually paskens in Shulchan Aruch. He says that even if you can, you have definitive, information that there is no flavor discernible, but it's less than 60, we don't allow it. Practically, we insist on 60 in order to make a bittul. So here comes a story. Hanu at mahasa. There were these thighs, right, the hind sections of the animal, which still had the geranasha intact. Imlichu, it was salted. They were heavily salted. Bay in the household of Reish Galusa, the head of the community in Babel, begidanasha with their geranasha inside. They didn't cook them yet. They didn't roast them, but they salted them. No, so what happens now? Do we say that the flavor of geranasha was now distributed and permeates the entire thing, or salting perhaps does not have that permeation effect? Ravina asar, he forbade consumption of the flesh because they absorb the flavor of the granasha. Rav Acha Baravashi Shar, he allowed it. Asu Shailua, they went to ask Lamar Baravashi. Amrli, he says, Abba Shar, my father Ravashi allowed it. Amrli Rav Acha Barav. So he approached Ravina. He says, my daitech, what are you based on? Your strict approach, what is it based on? Why would you say that salting forbids the entire thing? Is it based on Shmuel? Damar Shmuel, Shmuel teaches us, maliach, when something is heavily salted, harayu kireseach, it's as though it's, heated up and cooking. Kavish, likewise, if something's been pickled, sitting in, seasoning for a long time, arukim avushal, it's treated like it was cooked. So the heavily salting and the pickling effect is similar to cooking, and right. Likewise, over here, since the meat was heavily salted, it's kireseach, it was like really heated up, and the heat, makes the flavor travel around. Says the Gemara, Yvamar Shmuel, but Shmuel himself told us, Lo yishanu al shenis bashabu. The Mishnah considers the rest of the Yerech to be asr because of the gid content. That's only when it was cooked inside of it. They were cooked together, so the flavor travels around, and Aval nitzla, but Shmuel himself told us that roasting doesn't have that same effect. Aval nitzla bav, if the gid was roasted together with the rest, No worries. Just peel off this, the flesh, enjoy it, and until you get to the gidna, you discard of it. So basically, if roasting doesn't doesn't forbid the rest of the gid. So likewise, salting shouldn't be any worse than roasting, right? It's not cooking. Cooking is different. Cooking, the liquid, makes everything travel around. It permeates. It gets, spread around. But roasting or salting doesn't have that effect. Okay, so perhaps you'll say, when Shmuel says that Maliach is kareseach. Salting is like reseach, like heating it up. He meant to say like it was cooked up. He said kareseach, kareseach to mabushal. It was like heating, through cooking. So perhaps we can propose that salting has a greater effect than just roasting. But that's not so. Take another look at Shmuel's statement. He says two things. Kavash is kemabushal, right? So kavash is like mavushal. The pickling system is like a cooking system, similar experience. But maliach was not equated to cooking, he equated it to reseach. Yeah, there's intense heat, there's acidity, there's all that, but it's not like cooking. He made two different equations, right? Kovash is kemavushal. That's matched with mavushal, but maliach is not matched with mavushal. Matched with reseach. So you can't say v'chitem. Perhaps you'll say Mike reseach the ka'ama when he said maliach is kereseach. Kereseach the mavushal is like the heat of cooking. No, the ka'ama. But since in the second part of the statement he says kovash, haruk mavushal pickling has the same effect as cooking. Machal apparently the reseach is the ka'ama. When he said maliach is equated to reseach, he didn't mean the reseach of cooking. He meant the reseach of roasting. Doesn't have that permeating effect. The reseach that's likam akasha, in fact, that's akasha, that's unresolved. Amar b'chanina. How do you reckon the volume of 60? Amar b'chanina, k'shem yasharen. When we tally up the numbers, misharen b'reitiv. So you have a piece of unkosher material, unkosher meat, that fell into a big soup, which has meat, which has water, which has vegetables, which has the actual pot itself also, which has flavor inside it. You count it all in, you combine all that. So the sum total of all the permissible materials will gang up on the Isra, and if you have 60 times as much, it's bottle. When we evaluate the numbers, we count the soup, the liquid part, the fibers of meat, of vegetables that are, you know, stuck on the bottom of the, certainly the other pieces of meat, even the pot itself goes into the calculation. Some learn, he meant to say that we calculate the actual pot material as well, which had absorbed at an earlier time, has flavor within it, or perhaps the actual you know, clay itself has flavor. That also gets counted in. There's another version of what he said. We don't go that far that we'll actually factor in the material of the pot. It means to say, you know that the pot absorbs. So let's say you find less than 60 portions of heter. So we know that there was 60. There was enough when you started cooking. Now there's less. What happened to it? Oh, it was absorbed in the pot. So you can still factor that in to get you to a total of 60 times as much as the Isser and still maintain your bittul. Amar Rabbi Yivo, Amar Rabbi Yechna. Kol Yisurin Shabbatoyra Misharinan Kilo Hein Batzol V'Kafloit. Rashi says this was stated before the Halacha concluded that we always applied the law of 60. So Rabbo Kol Shabbi Yechnan, but a slightly different formula. Kol Yisurin Shabbatoyra, whenever we have a mix between Isser and Heter, Misharinon, we estimated kilu hein batzol v'kafloit, as though the Isser material is comprised of onion or leek that got mixed into the other permissible material. We would evaluate if this amount of batzol would get mixed into this amount of potatoes, would you still have the batzol flavor there? Would it be discernible? Then we know we have a problem. Otherwise, just as the batzel would be batzel, would not be discernible, likewise the iser of the same quantity is considered nullified in the heter of the other quantity as well. So basically, we use the onion and the kaflet as a sort of a prototype, okay, to set down a formula whether this amount would be batzel and indiscernible or not. Why are you going so easy? Why don't you use a sharper ingredient, something which would impart a more discernible flavor, which is harder to nullify? Why are you saying if it would be batzel, would be discernible, then it's a problem, otherwise it's batzel? Why don't you say something else? L'sharinu v'pilpulin v'tavlin. Why don't we use peppercorn, spices, as a prototype? Da'afilu v'elavloi b'talin. Those that are mixed into even 1,000 times as much don't become batel. They're discernible and, you know, enduring. Amalisi says it's not necessary to go that far. Shi'aru chacham hachamim estimated, they knew that, amongst the forbidden materials out there, we don't have such strong, potent materials that have such strong, enduring flavors. De'ein noisen tam b'yisurin. Amongst all the yisurin, there is no flavor, a producer, yoisim and butts of a conflict stronger than the flavor of the onion or the leek, and that's why it's adequate to be used for to be used as a formula regarding any isra had to mix up. But Rashi concludes that actually halacha l'maisa we work with the 60 rule all around. Okay, we'll leave the rest for next piece for tomorrow's daf. In summation, we discussed the extent of the Gid HaNasha, how deep, how wide, how big, right? And we took that took us into the next Mishnah regarding a Yerach that was cooked with the Gid HaNasha. So, Shmuel explained it to us. The issue is only if it's through cooking experience, in which case the flavor permeates, it gets distributed and spreads throughout. And if that flavor is discernible, it's nice and tam, it forbids the entire entity. Otherwise, it's batal. However, if it's merely roasted, or as we're going to see later, apparently heavily salted as well, has the same effect as roasting, then it doesn't spread throughout the entire entity. One exception is chalef. If it's fatty, really a fatty fat, then even through roasting, you'll have a distribution throughout the entire entity, in which case, there's nice and tam, it's aser. We discussed various ways of discerning the presence of the problematic flavors, whether it's tasting it, giving it to a goy, or employing the rule of bitul b'shishin. All the best to you, Natzlacha Rav.